Welcome to CHOAT's Intellectual Property Insights podcast series, hosted by intellectual property, litigation, and corporate attorneys covering trending topics at the intersection of science, technology, and law. Hello, and welcome to this CHOAT podcast addressing a recent update on obviousness type double patenting, also referred to as ODP. I'm Kristen Buto, a co-chair of the Patent and Intellectual Property Group at CHOAT. My practice focuses on patent prosecution in the chemistry and small molecule space. With me today is Steph Schoenwald, also a partner in the patent group here at CHOAT. Her practice focuses on patent prosecution of biological inventions. The legal landscape around obviousness type double patenting has been in flux over the last year, and we have started to see an increase in ODP rejections issued by the patent office, including rejections that rely on improper reference patent claims. For example, the USPTO is routinely rejecting patent applications for obviousness type double patenting over later filed, later expiring, unrelated patents. We're going to discuss why such rejections are improper and walk through a recent ex parte appeals case that addresses such rejections. However, before we get into the details, Steph, can you provide us with some background on obviousness type double patenting to set the stage?
Thanks, Kristen, and hello, everyone. Sure, happy to do that. Obviousness type double patenting is a judicially created doctrine intended to prevent an improper time-wise extension of a patent right by prohibiting the issuance to a single inventor of claims in a second patent, which are not patentably distinct from the claims of a first patent. So as such, when an ODP rejection is issued, the rejection is based on claims of the first patent. And I'm emphasizing the first and second because as we'll talk about the first, what's the first patent and what's the second patent becomes important. So again, for ODP, a rejection is based on claims of a first patent, sometimes in combination with other prior art. We'll refer to the cited patent or the first patent interchangeably as also calling it the reference patent. One quick note, while our discussion today is going to be focused on the use of reference patents in OD and their use in ODP rejections, patent applications can also be used as a reference in provisional ODP rejections. And the principles we will discuss today also apply to those provisional ODP rejections. I just want to make sure we're clarifying our comments around that so people understand how to apply the broader teachings and understandings today.
Great. Thank you. So, Steph, you said the ODP is intended to prevent an improper time-wise extension of a patent by prohibiting the issuance to a single inventor claims in a second patent, which are not patentably distinct from claims of a first patent. How do we understand which patent in the analysis is considered the first patent and which is the second patent?
Yeah, thankfully, the courts have provided us some guidance here. I think most people have heard of the Gilead case. So in that case, as well as in Allergan v. MSN Labs, the Federal Circuit held that earlier filed and earlier expiring patents qualified as reference patents for the purposes of ODP. It should be noted that the Federal Circuit reached this conclusion for patents that are subject to the Uruguay Round Agreement Act, which went into effect in 1995. As applications currently pending are overwhelmingly, if not completely, subject to the Uruguay Round Agreements Act, we can expect that the applications we're working on now before the office apply the rule that earlier filed and earlier expiring patents qualify as reference patents. So that means when we're determining if a patent qualifies as a reference patent for the purposes of ODP, we compare the effective filing date and the expiration date of the application at issue, for example, to the cited reference patent. If the cited reference patent was filed before and expires before the application at issue, the cited patent qualifies as a reference for an ODP rejection. The question that remained is, how do we think about the flip side? How do we treat later filed and later expiring patents cited in an ODP rejection?
I get the sense that most of the bar had assumed that later filed and later expiring patents shouldn't qualify as proper reference patents. And yet, the office seemingly disagrees. We've seen a number of ODP rejections recently based on later filed and later expiring patents.
Yeah, let's turn to an example of that.
Sure. In U.S. application number 17-135529, the office rejected the claims for ODP based on claims of an earlier issued patent, U.S. patent 10-882922. As previously discussed, the dates here matter. For the 529 application under examination, the filing date was March 28, 2012. Terminal disclaimers had been filed in the 529 application, setting the expiration date as March 28th of 2032 at the latest. Again, the 922 patent was being used as the reference patent. The filing date of the 922 patent was April 13th of 2017, which was about 5 years after the filing date of the 529 patent application. And its expiration date was June 22nd of 2037. So again, it was 5 years after the expiration date of any patent that would have issued from the 529 application. So accordingly, the 922 patent being used as a reference is both a later filed and later expiring patent as compared to the 529 application. While applicants noted this for the examiner nonetheless maintained the ODP rejection and the applicants appealed to the board in appeal number 2024-002920. On appeal, applicants argued that the claims of the 529 application could not be properly rejected under ODP based on the claims of the 922 patent because the 922 patent was later filed and later expiring and therefore was not a proper ODP reference. Following review of the case, the board agreed with the applicants.
The board's decision here makes good sense to me. First, one aim of the ODP doctrine is to prevent the filing of a second case with claims directed to obvious variations of the claims in a first patent. But that concern simply doesn't arise here when the reference patent is the second later filed case. Additionally, the 529 application at issue, as you mentioned, will expire nearly 5 years before the 922 patent. Therefore, there's no real risk of any patent issuing from the 529 application, which would improperly extend the term beyond that of the 922 patent. I also think another way to think of this case is that it's the natural outcome following Gilead and Allergan. If, for example, the earlier filed, earlier expiring patent is the first patent under the standard, which is what they said in those cases, that the later filed, later expiring patent should necessarily be the second patent. Said a little bit differently, the later filed, later expiring patent cannot be the first patent under the standard and therefore cannot serve as a reference patent.
I totally agree. And all of this may leave some people scratching their head as to how the office is justified issuing rejections based on later filed, later expiring patents. While the rationale is not clear in all cases, examiner's rejections against the 529 application suggest that she was applying a pre-URAA or pre-Gilead standard and looking at the issue date of the cited patent rather than the expiration date. The scenario is something to watch for when reviewing and considering ODP rejections.
Yes, applicants should be assessing the standard applied by examiners issuing ODP rejections, and also carefully reviewing the relevant filing and expiration dates to determine whether cited patents qualify as proper reference patents. One final note for everyone. While the appeal involving the 529 application should be persuasive to examiners and other board panels, I note it's not a binding case. So we're going to need to continue to watch for this issue, perhaps as it goes through the courts, as ODP has certainly become a litigation favorite as of late.
It sure has. Thank you, Steph, and thank you all for joining us. We hope this podcast has been helpful for understanding this update to the ODP legal landscape.
For more information, please visit www.choate.com. You can also listen to additional podcast episodes in the newsroom of our website and subscribe to them wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. The information presented in this recording is for educational purposes only. It does not constitute legal advice for a specific situation. If you wish to obtain legal advice, you should retain an attorney and explain the facts of your particular situation.